their hearts, and welcome. And thank you for joining us on this special evening, an evening we have devoted to the work of Mr. Robert Crosby, the founder of the United Lodge of Theosophy. Since 1934, in the month of June, and close to the passing day of his life, we set aside all else and show our appreciation to the founder of the United Lodge of Theosophists. It's because of the relentless, dedicated work and devotion of this one man who stayed absolutely focused on his goals that today we have the original, unaltered writings from the great founders of the Theosophical movement. Mr. Robert Crosby is why we're here tonight, mostly to give thanks, for it was solely through his non-oscillating exertions that we have the ULT, and through like efforts and a complete commonality of goals by others after the establishment of the ULT, that we have wonderful bricks and mortar to have these meetings not just here, but around the entire planet we call Earth. My job this evening is to give you a glimpse into the life of this humble man, a man that some have described as the rescuer of Theosophy. I will present to you with pleasure a small biography of the man behind the name, Robert Crosby. We'll start with January 10th, 1849, the date of his birth. His parents were both Scottish. They met and were married in Canada. His father was connected for many years with the Hudson Bay Company as a supervisor, and he traveled from post to post for a good part of the year. His mother was a companion to Lady Simpson, who was the wife of the governor of the Hudson Bay Company. A Highlander, she had but rarely used her capacity for second sight. She lived a life of self-sacrifice, compassion, and service to others. We move to 1865. Mr. Crosby, he's 16 years old at this point. He was raised a Presbyterian, and at the age of 16, he was invited to join the community, the Presbyterian Church. Mr. Crosby said he considered himself still unfit, unworthy to be a member. The subsequent discussions between him and the church caused him to doubt the honesty of that church's practice. He determined to find the truth, which in his eyes was knowledge, and which was to be found in due course by seeking it. He then adopted an attitude of constant questioning as to the object of life. Why pain? Why sickness? What about death? What about mercy, justice, destiny, and fate? He found that the religions around him offered no satisfactory answers when he questioned them deeply. At the age of 20 in 1869, Mr. Crosby and a partner started a leather and shoe manufacturing business in Montreal. Soon after that, he married the daughter of his partner. His partner's wife died, and because of that, his partner became interested in spiritualism. Crosby's interest was also piqued, and he began investigating spiritualism as well, but found nothing attractive in its facts or philosophy, and he had even observed some fraud. In some cases, hypnotism seems to have been involved. So he set about studying more. He studied hypnotism, mesmerism, clairvoyance, and telepathy with success. The psychic powers latent in man were found to exist and were seen by him, but their rationale was still to be understood. He sensed there was danger in those, and also sensed that he was receiving some guidance, which he later said helped him avoid unconscious black magic practices. Crosby always had a strong regard for the rights of others, and aware of this, always exercised moral control over himself. In the same year, a very favorable opportunity to sell their business in Montreal arose. The partners, after the sale, went to Boston. And they went there probably because of the high interest in spiritualism in that city. And there again, they started another shoe company and leather manufacturing business. It too became successful. In 1886 to 1888, his partner brought him news of the proposed establishment of a branch of the Theosophical Society in Boston. As the word Theosophia suggested much to him, Crosby went to the very first meeting. He recognized at once that this is what he was searching for, and he immediately joined. On June 5th in 1988, soon after William Q. Judge came to Boston to speak at the Theosophical Society, Crosby was introduced to him with other new members. After leaving the meeting, leaving for his hotel, Judge called back to Crosby. "Good night, Crosby. I've got you on my list." Mr. Crosby recorded, "A veil was lifted. A tie was formed, which has never since been broken." Mr. Judge came frequently to Boston and stayed at the Crosby house. When Crosby visited New York, he would stay with the judge. In 1889, Crosby was elected secretary of the Boston branch of the Theosophical Society, and later he was to be its president. June 1891 through 1896, after the death of H.P. Blavatsky, changes started to plague the Theosophical Society, and there begun to grow a chasm, a cancer, a divide of philosophical differences, and an environment of individuals seeking control and authority. After the passing of William Q. Judge, matters just got worse. Horrible information and disturbing lies released by some in New York were very upsetting to Mr. Crosby. In 1897, this is what Mr. Crosby had to say about the previous 5 years. "I was in Boston and had no reason to doubt the statements of those in New York, whom I believed to be sincere and of good training and judgment. I should have known by other means the true state of affairs. When Judge passed out of life, I lost touch with him. Doubtless I relied on him too much and had not exercised my own intuition. From later events, my comprehension is that the loss of touch was purposely done in order that I might strengthen my weaknesses in that direction." All came 1900. "I went to Point Loma, California, at Mrs. T's urgent request to assist in the proposed work of the Theosophical Society to prepare the way for the expected developments before I began to get back in touch with what I had lost. 4 years later, I am prone to excuse inconsistencies and deviations in others, so that although I had begun to doubt and to see, it was more than a year afterwards I saw so clearly and unmistakably that I took occasion to tell Mrs. T the facts as I saw them, and to state my intention to withdraw from all connections with the Theosophical Society. 1906, is now living in Pasadena, California, and starting to give theosophy classes at his home to neighbors, using the Key to Theosophy and the Bhagavad Gita, which, as we know, was theosophy 5,000 years ago. 1909, with the help of a few others who had come to share his own sectarian views of theosophy, Mr. Crosby formed the United Lodge of Theosophists, a body which was defined by a simple statement of policies and intentions, and set about the task of restoring the record of the theosophical teachings available to the public and inaugurating a program of practical theosophical education. There has been no change from that day to this in the ULT statement of purpose called the Declaration, and a little alteration, but not in principle, in the modes of work established by Mr. Crosby during his lifetime. These principles are to be found in the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The ULT Declaration of Principles and Policy, drawn very largely from the writings of William Q. Judge. This declaration was formulated by Mr. Crosby at the beginning and has ever since been circulated among students and associates to represent and give expression to their bond of union and basis of work. 1910, Letters. The Friendly Philosopher was written by Mr. Crosby to early students at various ULTs. Some of these lived and worked out of the San Francisco and other areas. These few letters concerned themselves with the principles on which the ULT was impersonally and a direct approach to the actual teachings of HPB and William Q. Judge. These teachings were stressed over and over again. November 1912, Theosophy Magazine was founded. Mr. Crosby served as chief editor until his death in 1919. In 1912, the midpoint of the second quarter of the movement, the magazine Theosophy was founded to provide a medium for dealing with theosophical philosophy and history, free from sectarian affiliations or influences. 1914, Theosophy School was started. This activity was adopted and implemented by most ULTs as they became established. In 1916, Because, for Children Who Ask Why, and Mr. Crosby is its editor. 1917 to 1918, Mr. Crosby set most of the Theosophical School songs to music himself. Mr. Crosby burdens during many years has been enormous. In addition to his other work, he was a frequent speaker at the meetings of the United Lodge. He was constantly at the service of the hundreds of students who sought his wise and benign counsels with their many problems. He attended personally, no matter what pressures upon his time and energies, to an incessant stream of correspondence from unknown inquirers who came in some unknown ways to learn of him and to seek his kind advice and suggestion. He never denied his help, but gave freely without stint or limit. Worn out in these unselfish labors for the benefit and advantage of his fellow men, burdened with the toil of advancing years, the frail body could no longer sustain the increasing demands upon it. He died as he had lived, calm and serene, with no word of complaint during the days of intense suffering that preceded his release. June 25th, 1919. Mr. Crosby dies at the age of 70. On a personal note, Mr. Crosby was married twice. He was 20 years old when he married his partner's daughter. That marriage ended in divorce, and the divorce tragically struck. His wife and child were killed in a house fire. April 10th, 1900, he married Josephine Parsons in Manchester, New Hampshire. They had two children, a daughter named Kathleen and a son, Cameron. Of course, we all will remember Mr. Crosby as the founder of the United Lodge of Theosophists, but on a daily basis, it's through his writings. His casual, down-home style makes his works a good first choice of any student looking for an introduction to the teachings. His ability to take a difficult question and to answer it in such a way as to make it a simple explanation of fact for all to understand was one of his great facets. And herein we see with Robert Crosby the true theosophical spirit exemplified. The desire to serve without reward other than the privilege of rendering the service. To the work of teaching real theosophy, Robert Crosby not only devoted his life, but sacrificed it, seeking neither reputation, honor, nor glory, and yes, even more, deliberately turning his back on them. Magazine Theosophy, February 1920. On page 107, there's a statement that says, neither Jesus nor HPB lived and died in order that a book or books might be swallowed wholesale, nor even that men should become disciples, but that all men should become brothers. To that statement, one might add that Robert Crosby did not live in order that books or pamphlets lauding or misrepresenting him should be swallowed wholesale, but that truth should prevail, for there is no religion higher than truth. There will now be four readings from the writings of H.P. Blavatsky, William Pugh Judge, and Robert Crosby. And then we'll have a talk entitled The Mission of the United Lodge of Theosophists.
Blavatsky. The beacon light upon which the eyes of all real theosophists are fixed is the same towards which, in all ages, the imprisoned human soul has struggled. This beacon, whose light shines upon no earthly seas, but which has mirrored itself in the somber depths of the primordial waters of infinite space, is called by us, as by the earliest theosophists, divine wisdom. This same wisdom, or as we say sometimes, the wisdom religion or theosophy, is as old as the human mind. The title of sages, the priests of this worship of truth, was its first derivative. These names were afterwards transformed into philosophy and philosophers, the lovers of science or of wisdom. It is to Pythagoras that we owe that name, as also that of Gnosis, the system of the knowledge of things as they are, or of the essence of the that is hidden beneath external appearances. Under that name, so noble and so correct in its definition, all the masters of antiquity designated the aggregate of our knowledge of things human and divine. Theosophy, being the way that leads to truth, in every religion and in every science, occultism is, so to say, the touchstone and universal solvent. It is the thread of Aridini, given by the master to the disciple who ventures into the labyrinth of the mysteries of being, the torch that lights him through the dangerous maze of life, forever the enigma of the Sphinx. But the light thrown by this torch can be discerned only in the eye of the awakened soul by our spiritual senses. It blinds the eye of the materialist as the sun blinds that of the owl. Belief in the masses was never made an article of faith for theosophists, but this is what one of them wrote in a letter preserved to this day. Theosophy must not present merely a collection of moral verities, a bundle of metaphysical ethics, epitomized in theoretical dissertations. Theosophy must be made practical. It has to find objective expression in an all-embracing code of life, thoroughly impregnated with its spirit, the spirit of mutual tolerance, charity, and love. It is only theosophy well understood that can save the world from despair. By reproducing social and religious reform, a task once before accomplished in history by Gautama the Buddha, a peaceful reform without one drop of blood spilt. For many a long year, the great orphan, humanity, has been crying aloud in the darkness for guidance and for light. Amid the increasing splendor of a progress purely material, of a science that nourished the intellect but left the spirit to starve, humanity dimly realizing its origin and presaging its destiny, has stretched out towards the east empty hands, the only spiritual philosophy can fill. Only the masters of the Eastern wisdom can satisfy at once the intellect and the spirit, can guide humanity safely through the night to the dawn of a larger day.
From the writings of William Q. Judge. Underlying the doctrines of theosophy is one fundamental proposition, namely, the essential unity of all life and being. Manifestation of life is differentiated of this unity. The purpose of degeneracy is evolution, and the destiny of evolution is the return of all manifestation into its source and original unity. Of the manifestation of life, there are two phases, poles or aspects. The descent of spirit into matter and the ascent of matter into spirit. The infinite variety of gradation in development between these two poles mark the degree of differentiation from the unity in its downward or upward course. Theosophy is not a new invention, but the essential underlying truth of all philosophies. It is a body of doctrine in philosophy, science, and ethics, and principally derived from the Eastern archives, sacred theories, which were worked out by a brotherhood of devotees and initiates who used every method of scientific investigation known to us, as well as their own highly developed practices of observation, experiment, and concentration and meditation to reach the truth. They traced all phenomena by every possible means from their significant to their source, and by comparison of their independent searches and observations, recorded their conclusions and accepted such results only as could stand for the test of applicability and verification from every point in every conceivable direction. This slowly accumulating body of facts furnished the basis for these great universal doctrines, handed down from generation to generation since time immortal. Portions are given out from time to time, such as may be safely trusted to an advancing age, because to penetrate into the mysteries of nature requires a state of the greatest purity and perfection. And this final perfection is not a gift to be expected from without, but is to be worked for by those who desire it. It is often inquired why this grand philosophy has existed for so long a time, and yet so little of it has reached our all-conquering civilization. This is due to the fact that our civilization has mainly occupied itself with material and intellectual progress, refusing to even recognize the superior faculties of intuition in man's capability of spiritual culture. It is the aim of theosophy to bring to the notice of those who are inclined to admit that the spiritual nature of man and his progress of evolution, that on another plane of existence, a plane which partakes of a wider field of consciousness and which lies within the capability of development in every individual, that on that higher plane there is a spiritual unity, a universal brotherhood of mankind, and on that plane of being there is no separateness from homogeneous existence, and further, no permanent progress is possible through fostering the illusion of separateness. And that's man's true duty at all times and in all circumstances, is the love of his kind and the preservation of harmony around him.
From the writings of Robert Crosby. The seeker for truth and knowledge must see the one self in all things, and all things in the self, and then act for and as the self of all. All sacred writings are addressed to the individual, for it is from within the individual and the individual alone that reformation can begin and must be consummated. The study and application of the Gita tends to break down all ideas based upon separateness and impresses upon the student that the way of true knowledge of the divine perfection lies in universal service. Theosophists of every degree should realize that under karma, much is required of those to whom much has been given in opportunity and knowledge. We can only use our opportunities and knowledge to the best possible advantage and continue to do so if we would not ourselves fall short of the requirement of the law of laws, compassion absolute. The real point of issue is the divine nature in man. We find ourselves prevented on every hand from taking the position of the true nature. It seems impossible, but this is only a delusion born from the false faith we have held. We have established ideas, likes and dislikes, and feelings which under the law of return of impressions recur again and again. The moment we attempt to take an opposite stand, we meet the result of the combined action of all these forces within ourselves. This is what we may call the war in heaven, the war in man's own nature. But if he remains true to his own spiritual nature, he is bound to be the conqueror. If he has fallen in the law of his own nature, he will go forward and gradually the obstacles. No. If he has faith in the law of his own nature, he will go forward and gradually the obstacles will disappear. Each man is responsible for his own external affairs, conditions, and circumstances, for his character, qualities, and tendencies, for his mental, moral, psychic, and spiritual nature upon every plane of consciousness. He is likewise responsible for the effects of his thought and action on his fellow men and on the kingdoms below man. He cannot save himself at the expense of any other being, nor can he have true happiness so long as any of his fellow men suffer. As he is a self-conscious being with the power of acquiring qualities and of manipulating the lower natures, it devolves upon him to understand the nature of all things, that he may use them beneficently. Only when the feeling of responsibility, which is the beginning of selflessness, moves man to clarification of their minds and to conformity of feeling, thought, and act with the true rationale of life, can this understanding be had. When all our false beliefs, our desires and passions, our likes and dislikes have fallen away from us like cast-off garments, and we have resumed that nature of us which is divine, then we shall be able to build a civilization as much higher than this as we can possibly imagine.
From the writings of Robert Crosby. A true theosophic life can be lived anywhere, alone or in crowds, for it is a life of right ideas. The only way to better conditions is through better ideas. Bettering conditions without bettering ideas merely puts men in a place more favorable for acting on wrong ideas, and gives them opportunity for exploiting their selfishness. Everything depends upon the ideas that men hold. If people as a whole could be brought into the position of listening to the message of theosophy and applying it, the misery and suffering and hardship that now exist in the world would practically cease to exist. But they must first desire and choose to listen. Theosophy must be understood to be a gift to mankind by more progressed beings than ourselves. We must learn and apply the fundamental principles which underlie that grand philosophy and understand the operation of law as disclosed therein. Then, and only then, can we begin to make theosophy a living power in our lives. If each student did this, all would have one aim, one purpose, one teaching, and a sure basis for united effort. Such differences of individual opinion as might arise would be solved by a careful adjustment of these to the philosophy. Thus, all would be united, all preserve the utmost freedom of thought, all progress most rapidly by self-induced and self-progress. No one, then, would make the fatal blunder of imagining that theosophy is something which can be developed, but each would devote his thought and effort to growth along the lines that theosophy indicates, so that he may become the better able to help and teach others. The laws and principles of existence, the true rationale of life, are presented by theosophy. Hence, each man's contact with it is alike an opportunity and a responsibility to which he has been brought under karma. He can make the most of it, or he may neglect it, so as to fail to obtain or extend benefit. His refusal to take advantage of it now will make him less determined in some other life to carry out the purpose of his nature, which is defeated if he neglects, under any circumstance or pressure, that which he sees to be leading him in the right direction. Theosophy is for those who want it. We are to hold, wait, and work for those few earnest souls who will grasp the plan and further the cause. Many have their ears so dulled or their attention so diverted that no number of repetitions can reach them. Yet theosophy must be held out continually for all who will listen. That is our self-assumed work. We have our example in HPB and William Q. Judge. As to means, method, and manner, let us imitate them and so do their work in their spirit.
Good evening. Knowing the work of Mr. Crosby as we all do, we can only imagine that right about now he'd be cringing a little at the spotlight being placed upon his work and his life. And in some ways, we need desperately to focus the spotlight on this particular day in this way, because too frequently, no matter how serious we are, no matter how sincere we are, we overlook guideposts. Our subject for tonight is the mission of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And put quite simply, at the top of the banner of our periodical, to spread broadcast the teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. End of talk, in a certain way. On the back of this periodical, 107 years ago, a little bit more, Mr. Crosby worked diligently, sweetly, sincerely, and very wisely at collating comments from both H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge, and put together an incredibly spiritual document, the Declaration for the United Lodge. And if we're traveling at all this summer, to be perfectly honest, thanks to the efforts of a little band of volunteers here in Philadelphia, we could carry with us the periodical for the Philadelphia branch of ULT and use it as a meditation device, use it as a rejuvenation tool, if you will. It's all in a nutshell, very simply stated. However, it's important that we attend to it, and it's important that we bring our minds together in commemorating the accomplishments of the past, but certainly to focus ourselves in the present and to hold the mission of ULT as lofty as we possibly can within the conditions of our lives. This evening we've heard, you know, the bio of the consummate student that Mr. Crosby was. We've heard from HPB holding a torch, if you will, a beacon light, tracing the path of the ancients and the wisdom that came down through the ages. We've heard a reading from Judge discussing being a preserver and a promulgator of the message that was left in the late 1800s. And we certainly heard a couple of readings from Crosby himself on the nature of the individual effort that it takes for anyone associated with the cause or for someone who's a new visitor to seek for truth and to lead the life needed for that truth to shine through from within. Yes, it's true that ULT was founded in 1909, but it is the latest and purest embodiment, if you will, of a timeless theosophical movement, one that is all the way back antediluvian, if you will. And in that movement, in 1875 to 1900, were sown the seeds for a movement that could be revitalized again, 1975, 2075, or frankly with the dawning of each day of anyone interested in holding it. The mission of ULT was a reform movement, was it not? It was a reform, if you will, a reform movement for those attempting to fit themselves by studying otherwise to serve humanity. It was a reform and an emphasis that each center for study, each lodge with the United Lodge of Theosophists as a chosen title, the study is not to produce a Mahatma or to produce powers or personalities or politics or prestige, whatever, but rather the emphasis is on the study of the philosophy, pure and simple, on the principles and the propositions laid down by those who know. ULT is the process of reforming a haven for all seekers of truth, all who are in service of humanity, a lodge, a storage place where straight line materials and the presentation of those materials, the study of those materials, the discussion of those materials can be kept going. It's a source open to all in the public who might also be in need and be searching, who would avail themselves of the ancient wisdom. And finally, ULT reformed so that the efforts of the founders of the modern theosophical movement could continue on, that in practice these principles would come to life. Last Sunday we heard about the sacred pledge of Kuan Yin, and we know that throughout the world, across time and places and peoples, there are many such sacred statements of pure theosophy. It is in ULT that the effort is made to keep these pure and straight line statements before the public eye. So any student, an independent free thinker, a visitor who wishes to associate themselves with this search for truth, any associate can hold the same exact mission of ULT. The mission can be held in a self-fulfilled and a self-devised effort, and we can commemorate and rededicate ourselves to re-embodying this sweet declaration, to applying it, to watch for pitfalls around the world or within ourselves or among ourselves, so that the mission remains alive. The principles and propositions of the philosophy of theosophy, as recorded by Blavatsky and Judge, offer the knowledge of the essential unity of all life, so that each can make himself or herself wise in the true nature of self and active in universal brotherhood. And therein is the greatest mission of all, to practice what the philosophy shows and to therefore embody and radiate as best we can in the conditions of our lives that message to everyone that we come in contact with. And so as independent thinkers, as independent thinkers that volunteer to come into discussion groups and study classes, we strive to make theosophy a living power in life, within ourselves, within the other, because all at the spiritual plane are one and the same. The original teachings, all the collations of Blavatsky and Judge are made available. Students working independently critically look at the three objects of the original theosophical movement, and they, in paraphrasing, they try to create the nucleus of universal brotherhood within and without. They examine and compare and critically think about the nature of religions, philosophy, science. They study the metaphysics that they see about them in the universe at the mega level, as well as at the microcosmic level of man. They look into the principles of what it is to be the real human. We see in ULT classes an effort being made to learn and to apply the three fundamental propositions of the philosophy: a deific essence, periodic law in the human kingdom, reincarnation and karma, and ultimately the notion of evolution and what it is to be spirit working through the human condition. And we trust in the law that all these efforts, the mission of the lodge, the mission of an individual student, that all of this is a self-fulfilling prophecy. This is a birthright of each and all. Universal brotherhood is not a theory, it's a reality. Altruism is not an ideal, it is a potential and a very, very possible reality. So the lodges may look different around the globe. There may be many different degrees of communicating the original lines of the philosophy. Certainly in this new electronic and digital age, with social media and everything else, we couldn't even begin to envision what the process of communication might be in 5 or 10 years. But whatever it is, whatever the form takes, if we hold true to the mission of ULT, we will be able to communicate all well. We'll be able to bloom where we plant it without pride, prejudice, personalities, or politics. Working together, anyone who avails themselves of the study classes and associates themselves with the effort here in Philadelphia is preparing the substance through which all can work to evolve a better condition, a higher degree of consciousness for all manifestation, not just the human. Working together, we can preserve the body of the philosophy in its pure 19th century form. We can archive, we can cross-examine, we can trade with other lodges around the world, we can literally publish online at will, and all of that will promulgate the philosophy. Always and forever, as Crosby would have it, as he set it up, as Mr. Wadia continued the effort in the years following Crosby's death, the assistance that volunteer students provide to others is very different in ULT. Modern school teachers are now taught that students don't learn a lot by the sage on the stage, the lecture phenomenon. Modern teachers in public schools are being taught that it's far better for a teacher to be a guide on the side. In other words, set up cooperative learning groups, be there as an advisor, and allow the students to explore and to critically think and learn for themselves. ULT, in advance of those notions, established the fact that all associates are fellow students, and that's all. We may help assist someone in their study, we may offer advice on a particular reading that might be helpful, but there's no sage on the stage, there's no priestcraft, and truly there are no true guides on the side. It's more a cooperative learning circle, if you will, or a center that works best, that works as Crosby would have it. And so, if we think about behind will stands desire, and if we consider Crosby's words, to hold out, to wait, to work, we know that if we desire a sustained effort, if we desire humble devotion, if we desire to think for and with others, If we desire to fulfill our duty and be available to all, to guide however few or however many come into our sphere of influence. If that's the desire, right behind it, right following it, will come the will to do the work to sustain the mission. So magic there is to be done. Each one is a working center or a nucleus of universal brotherhood. And despite the form, the function, the association, the conditions, whatever, disaster, whatever it is, one pointedness, living mindfully, we can fulfill the mission. Crosby wrote about unity, study, and work. And in the Gita, in the translation by Judge, we have in the final chapter the statement, act as seemeth best to thee. So fear no, there's nothing to fear about the mission of the lodge and what's to come. We do have to remain alert to the possible abridgment of individual judgment, for there can be no dogma, there can be no creed, if you will, where the human mind is struggling to be free. And we can't fear the cessation of effort to develop individual intuition. We know cycles in personal lives and cycles in the life of a particular lodge has a rest period and a work period, an active period, a rest period. And so, if we hold on and be alert and continue our hopes, if we continue to revisit that card of association that you can find on the table, or you can find stated on the periodical, being in sympathy with the purposes of this lodge as set forth in its declaration, I hereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate, it being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part other than that which I myself determine. And so there's some reading that we'd like to invite you to do. A daily reading of the Declaration for a little while, maybe first thing in the morning, is a wonderful, wonderful way to set a keynote for a day. It holds within it tremendous concepts of what the philosophy is about. Any Wednesday that the reference library is open, you're welcome to stop in and read the annual letter that has arrived, with a statement about the nature of ULT and why that's available. And the other thing to recall is that all around the world, all around planet Earth, there are other individuals, kindred spirits, soulmates, if you will. We may never have seen them, we may never meet them. But the reality is that working for this declaration, holding this mission to be most sacred, we are one and the same. And so we're reminded that this week around the world, in Antwerp, Belgium, Athens, Greece, Bangalore, India, in two places in Bombay, India, in Brazil, in Dijon, France, in Douala, Cameroon, Guadalajara, Mexico, Jacmel in Haiti, London in England, as well as London in Canada, in Los Angeles, California, in Madras, India, in Malmo, Sweden, in Mexico City, Mexico, in New Delhi, India, New York City, New York, in Paris, France, here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in Phoenix, Arizona, in San Diego, California, San Francisco, California, Santa Barbara, California, Sarasota, Florida, in The Hague, the Netherlands, in Torino, Italy, and in Washington, D.C., USA, there are kindred spirits and so many more isolated souls working alone on islands, in deserts, and mountaintops, all with the same mission, all invigorated by the same concept of keeping alive the philosophy of theosophy so that it can best serve every soul in manifestation, every degree of consciousness in conditioned experience. So please take a few minutes, if you will, to celebrate the fellowship of ULT, and thank you for coming to me. Thank you.